The Fallen Legionnaire. Chapter 1. The Warrior's Burden. The year is 180 CE, and the northern forests of Germania are steeped in mist and blood. The scent of war lingers in the air, a mixture of sweat, iron, and decay. The Roman legions, led by General Lucius Flavius Marcellus, stand on the brink of their final victory against the rebellious Germanic tribes. Their camp is a hive of activity, with soldiers sharpening swords, tending to wounds, and readying themselves for the decisive battle at dawn. Marcellus, a man whose presence commands loyalty and respect, surveys the preparations. His face, weathered by countless campaigns, carries the weight of leadership. His soldiers know him not only as a brilliant strategist, but as a man who fights alongside them, his sword as swift and deadly as his commands. But tonight, his thoughts are elsewhere, carried away by the yearning for his farm in Hispania, his wife, and his young son. The longing for home is an ache that has grown sharper with each passing year. As he walks through the camp, Marcellus exchanges brief words with his officers. Septimus, his second in command, reports the readiness of the troops, while Gaius, his loyal orderly, tends to the general's equipment. Despite the grimness of their surroundings, the men draw strength from Marcellus's calm demeanor. They believe in him, and that belief binds them together as they face the brutal enemy ahead. In his tent, Marcellus reviews the battle plans. The Germanic tribes are fierce warriors, but their lack of unity is their weakness. Marcellus has devised a strategy to divide and conquer them, using the terrain to the Romans' advantage. He knows this campaign will be his last. The emperor himself has assured him of that. With victory here, Marcellus will return to Hispania, to the olive groves, and to the family that has been his beacon in the darkness. As the night deepens, Marcellus is summoned to the emperor's tent. Emperor Tiberius Claudius Severus, aged and frail, sits by the fire, his eyes reflecting the wisdom and burden of a long reign. The conversation begins with pleasantries, but it soon turns to matters of grave importance. The emperor reveals his decision. Cassianus, his son and heir, is unfit to rule. His cruelty, vanity, and hunger for power threaten the stability of the empire. Tiberius, in his final act as ruler, wishes to name Marcellus as regent to restore the republic. The weight of the emperor's words crashes upon Marcellus like a wave. He is a soldier, not a politician. His loyalty is to Rome, but the idea of ruling it is unthinkable. Yet, as the emperor speaks of his vision for a Rome free of corruption and tyranny, Marcellus cannot deny the nobility of the cause. Reluctantly, he agrees, knowing the cost of such a responsibility. Unbeknownst to them, Cassianus has overheard the conversation. Consumed by jealousy and rage, he plots his father's demise. The shadows of the night hide his fury, but his mind races with plans to secure his place on the throne. As dawn breaks, the Roman army marches into battle. The clash of swords and the cries of warriors fill the air. Marcellus leads his legions with unmatched skill, turning the tide of the battle in Rome's favor. The Germanic tribes are defeated, their rebellion crushed. Victory is theirs, but it is bittersweet. Marcellus feels the pull of destiny, the emperor's words echoing in his mind. That evening, as the soldiers celebrate, Marcellus retreats to his tent. Gaius brings him a letter from Hispania, the handwriting of his wife bringing a rare smile to his lips. He reads her words of love and longing, the promise of reunion alight in the darkness. Yet, in his heart, he knows the path ahead will be fraught with danger. Far away, in the emperor's chambers, Cassianus makes his move. With cold determination, he murders his father, his hands trembling not with remorse, but with the thrill of power. As Tiberius breathes his last, the fate of Rome takes a dark turn. Cassianus proclaims himself emperor, his first act to summon Marcellus. The general arrives, unaware of the tragedy that has unfolded. Cassianus greets him with a false smile, his voice dripping with mockery as he demands Marcellus's loyalty. But Marcellus, sensing the treachery, refuses. His defiance is met with fury, and Cassianus orders his arrest. Septimus, torn between duty and friendship, leads the Praetorian guards to seize Marcellus. The general, betrayed and surrounded, fights with the ferocity of a cornered lion. Blood is spilled, but Marcellus escapes, wounded and desperate, his thoughts only of his family. He rides through the night, the Roman roads blurring in his vision as pain and fear drive him forward. The journey to Hispania is a torment, his injuries slowing him, but his determination unwavering. The thought of his wife and son is the only thing keeping him alive. But when he finally reaches his farm, the sight that greets him is a nightmare. The fields are silent, the air heavy with the stench of death. He stumbles toward the house, his heart pounding in his chest. And there, he finds them. his wife and son, lifeless, their bodies bearing the marks of brutality. Marcellus collapses beside them, his cries of anguish piercing the stillness. He buries them with his own hands, the task breaking him in ways no battlefield ever could. As he stands over their graves, his mind is consumed by grief and rage. He vows vengeance, not just for his family, but for the Rome that has been betrayed. Exhausted and wounded, Marcellus falls to the ground. The world fades to black as slave traders approach, their eyes gleaming with the prospect of profit. They load his broken body onto a cart, their whispers blending with the wind. Marcellus, the great general of Rome, has fallen. But in the ashes of his despair, a spark of defiance remains. His journey is far from over, and the gods are not done with him yet. Chapter 2, Chains of Fate. The desert sun blazed mercilessly as the slave trader's caravan snaked its way through the arid expanse of the Mauritanian province. Lucius Flavius Marcellus lay in the back of a wooden cart, his body broken and bound, his once pristine armor now tarnished and splattered with blood and dirt. The great general of Rome had been reduced to a nameless commodity, his identity stripped away and his future uncertain. Marcellus drifted in and out of consciousness, haunted by visions of his wife and son. Their faces, once a source of comfort and joy, now twisted into silent cries for justice. Every bump of the cart sent pain shooting through his battered body, yet it was the ache in his soul that hurt the most. He was a man untethered, no longer a general, no longer a father, no longer free. The slave traders, hardened men with little regard for the lives they transported, spoke in clipped tones as they discussed the value of their latest catch. "This one's a fighter," said one, gesturing to Marcellus. "Look at his build. He'll fetch a high price at the arena." Another laughed, shaking his head. "He looks half dead. We'll be lucky if he survives the journey." Despite their words, Marcellus's ears caught every syllable. He remained silent, his strength too depleted for resistance, but his mind began to stir. They would sell him, make him fight for the amusement of others, but they had underestimated him. He had survived worse, and as long as he drew breath, he would not give up. The caravan eventually arrived at the bustling town of Zucabar, a hub of trade and entertainment in the Roman province of Mauritania Caesariensis. The marketplace was alive with noise and chaos, merchants hawking wares, and the scent of spices mixing with the stench of livestock and unwashed bodies. The slave traders led Marcellus and others like him through the crowded streets, their chains clinking ominously. At the center of the marketplace stood a wooden platform, the stage for the human trade. The slave master, a portly man with a booming voice, began the auction. One by one, the captives were paraded before the crowd, their fates sealed by the highest bidder. When it was Marcellus's turn, the crowd murmured at his imposing figure, noting the scars and hardened gaze that marked him as a soldier. The bidding was swift. A lean man with sharp features and a calculating gaze stepped forward, raising his hand decisively. 500 denarii, he called, silencing the competition. His name was Proximus Aelius, a former gladiator turned trainer who saw potential in Marcellus. He was known for turning broken men into champions, and he recognized the fire still smoldering in this one. Proximus approached Marcellus as the guards unshackled him. "You're mine now," he said, his tone firm but not unkind. "Welcome to the arena." Marcellus did not respond, his eyes locking onto Proximus with a mixture of disdain and defiance. Proximus chuckled. "Good. You have fight in you. You'll need it." The gladiator school, or ludus, was a grim place. The stench of sweat and blood permeated the air, and the clang of steel echoed in the training yard. Men from all corners of the empire trained under the watchful eyes of Proximus and his instructors. Some were criminals, others slaves, but all shared the same grim fate: to fight and most likely die for the amusement of the masses. Marcellus was thrown into this harsh world, his body still recovering from his wounds. He was paired with a group of seasoned gladiators: Joran, a towering Germanic warrior with a booming laugh; Camel, a skilled swordsman from Carthage with a quick wit; and Hagen, a taciturn veteran with a brutal fighting style. Despite their differences, they recognized Marcellus's potential and took him under their wing. Training was grueling. The gladiators sparred with wooden weapons, their bodies battered and bruised by the relentless drills. Proximus observed from the sidelines, occasionally barking orders or offering terse advice. He saw promise in Marcellus, but knew the man needed more than skill to survive. "You're not just fighting to live," Proximus told him one evening. "You're fighting to win the crowd. Their favor is your shield, their cheers your weapon. Without them, you're nothing." Marcellus said nothing, his mind still consumed by grief and rage. But the words planted a seed. He understood that survival in this new world required more than brute strength. If he was to rise above his chains, he needed to become more than a man. He needed to become a symbol. Marcellus's first fight in the arena came sooner than expected. The crowd in Zuccabar's modest amphitheater roared with excitement as the gates opened, revealing the gladiators. Marcellus stepped into the sunlight, his heart pounding in his chest. He had faced armies, led legions, but this was different. The stakes were personal now, and failure meant death. His opponent was a brutish Thracian, his body covered in tattoos, and his eyes filled with bloodlust. The crowd jeered and cheered as the two men faced off, their weapons gleaming in the sun. Marcellus gripped his gladius, the weight of the blade unfamiliar yet comforting. The fight was brutal. The Thracian attacked with wild swings, forcing Marcellus to rely on his agility and instincts. Every move was met with the roar of the crowd, their energy a palpable force that filled the arena. Marcellus fought with the precision of a soldier, his training and experience guiding his actions. In the end, it was strategy that won the day. Marcellus feigned weakness, luring his opponent into a reckless charge. With a swift counterstrike, he delivered the killing blow, the Thracian collapsing in a pool of blood. The crowd erupted into cheers, chanting a name they had not yet learned but would soon never forget. As Marcellus stood over his fallen foe, his chest heaving, he realized something profound. This was not the life he had chosen, but it was the one he had. And if he was to survive, to honor the memory of his family and seek vengeance, he needed to master it. He would not just fight, he would rise. From the stands, Proximus watched with satisfaction. "He's ready," he muttered to himself. "Rome will remember his name." Chapter 3. The Spaniard's Ascent. The cool evening air of Zuccabar provided little solace as Lucius Flavius Marcellus, now known to the arena crowds as the Spaniard, sat alone in the gladiator barracks. His body ached from the day's battle, but his mind was sharper than ever. The chants of the crowd from earlier still echoed in his ears, a strange symphony of adoration and bloodlust. He clenched his fists, knowing that every fight brought him one step closer to freedom and, ultimately, vengeance. Across the room, Joran, the towering Germanic warrior, approached, carrying a bowl of stew. He dropped it on the bench beside Marcellus and sat down with a thud, his massive frame making the wooden seat creak. "You fight like a man with nothing to lose," Joran said, his voice gruff yet tinged with curiosity. Marcellus didn't look up. "Because I don't," he replied curtly. Joran chuckled, his laughter booming. "A man with nothing to lose is either very dangerous or very stupid. Which are you?" Marcellus finally met his gaze, his eyes hard as steel. "Both." The response seemed to amuse Joran, who clapped Marcellus on the shoulder with enough force to jolt him forward. "Then you'll do well here," he said. "But remember, this place doesn't just kill your body. It kills your soul." The weeks that followed were a blur of relentless training and brutal matches. Marcellus honed his skills, each fight sharpening his instincts and hardening his resolve. He formed an uneasy camaraderie with the other gladiators. Joran became a steady presence, his good-natured humor balancing Marcellus's grim determination. Camel, the quick-witted Carthaginian, offered strategies and advice during training. Even Hagen, the silent and stoic veteran, seemed to acknowledge Marcellus's growing prowess with a rare nod of approval. But Proximus, their trainer and master, was not a man to hand out praise easily. "Your victories mean nothing if you don't win the crowd," he reminded Marcellus after each fight. "Rome loves a hero, but it worships a legend. If you want to survive, you must become both." The words lingered with Marcellus, planting a seed of purpose. He understood that brute strength alone would not guarantee his survival or his eventual freedom. He needed to become a symbol, a figure that the people could not ignore, one that even the emperor would have to reckon with. One fateful morning, Proximus gathered his gladiators in the training yard. His usual stern demeanor was replaced with a flicker of excitement. "We've been invited to Rome," he announced, pacing before the assembled men. "The Colosseum, the grandest stage of all. This is not just an opportunity, it is a test. Fail, and you will be forgotten. Succeed, and your name will echo through eternity." The gladiators exchanged glances, a mix of excitement and trepidation in their eyes. For some, the Colosseum was a chance to prove their worth. For others, it was a death sentence. But for Marcellus, it was something far more significant. Rome was where his journey had begun, where his life had been torn apart. It was where his vengeance would take root. The journey to Rome was long and arduous. The gladiators traveled in a caravan, their days filled with grueling drills and their nights spent under the stars, their thoughts heavy with anticipation. Along the way, Marcellus began to notice the cracks in Proximus's hardened exterior. Late one night, as the others slept, Proximus sat by the fire, his gaze distant. "You were one of us once," Marcellus said, breaking the silence. Proximus glanced at him, a wry smile playing on his lips. "A long time ago, I fought for my freedom, and I earned it. But freedom, it's not as simple as it seems." "What do you mean?" Proximus sighed, poking at the fire with a stick. "When you're in the arena, the world is black and white. Live or die. Fight or fall. But once you're free, the gray sets in. You realize the world outside is just another arena, and the rules are even crueler." Marcellus didn't respond, but the words stayed with him. He knew his own freedom, if it came, would be fleeting. There was no peace waiting for him, no solace. Only vengeance. Rome was a city of contradictions. Its grandeur was undeniable, with towering marble structures and bustling markets that showcased the wealth of the empire. But beneath the surface lay a simmering tension. Poverty and corruption gnawed at the edges of the city, even as its citizens reveled in the decadence of gladiatorial games. The Colosseum loomed over the city like a monument to blood and power. It was here that Marcellus would face his greatest trials. As the gladiators entered the arena's underground chambers, the sheer scale of the Colosseum became apparent. The roar of the crowd above was deafening, a living, breathing force that seemed to shake the very walls. Their first match in Rome was a spectacle designed to awe the masses. The gladiators were cast as Carthaginians in a reenactment of the Battle of Zoma. Dressed in armor that barely fit, they were led into the arena to face overwhelming odds. Chariots thundered across the sand, archers loosed arrows from the stands, and armored soldiers advanced in formation. Marcellus took command without hesitation. His voice cut through the chaos, rallying his fellow gladiators and coordinating their movements. They fought as one, using the terrain and their wits to outmaneuver their enemies. The crowd, initially cheering for their slaughter, began to shift. The tide of the battle turned, and the gladiators emerged victorious, standing bloodied but unbroken. As Marcellus stood in the center of the arena, his chest heaving and his sword raised high, the crowd erupted in a deafening roar. They chanted his name, the Spaniard, their voices a thunderous wave that seemed to shake the heavens. From the emperor's box, Cassianus watched with a mixture of curiosity and disdain. Beside him sat his young nephew, Lucian, who leaned forward in fascination. "Who is he, uncle?" the boy asked, his eyes wide with wonder. Cassianus's lips curled into a sneer. "A slave, nothing more." But deep down, the emperor felt a flicker of unease. There was something about this gladiator, something that made the cheers of the crowd feel like a threat. That night, Marcellus sat alone in the barracks, the cheers of the crowd still ringing in his ears. For the first time since his capture, he felt a glimmer of hope. Not for freedom, but for the chance to finish what he had started. Rome had taken everything from him, but it had also given him a stage, and he intended to use it. In the darkness, Joran approached, his usual grin replaced with a somber expression. "You've stirred the hornet's nest, my friend," he said, sitting beside Marcellus. "Good," Marcellus replied, his voice steady. "Because I'm not done yet." Chapter 4, Shadows of Vengeance. The Colosseum's roaring crowd had grown accustomed to a new name echoing through its arches, the Spaniard. Lucius Flavius Marcellus had quickly become the darling of Rome's blood-soaked sands, his tactical brilliance and unwavering resolve captivating the masses. But for Marcellus, each victory was not a celebration. It was a step closer to his ultimate goal. Every cheer reminded him of the family he had lost and the empire he now sought to dismantle from within. The emperor's gaze. From his gilded seat in the imperial box, Emperor Cassianus surveyed the crowd, his jaw tightening as they chanted the name of the gladiator who had defied death so many times. His sister, Aurelia, sat beside him, her composed demeanor masking the turbulence within her. The emperor's paranoia grew with every fight Marcellus won, yet he couldn't bring himself to silence the man. The Spaniard had become a symbol of Rome's gladiatorial games, and to kill him without cause risked inviting public dissent. Aurelia, ever observant, noticed her brother's discomfort. "You fear him," she said softly, her tone careful not to provoke. Cassianus turned to her, his expression hardening. "I fear no man, least of all a slave," he spat. "But the people love him, and love is a dangerous weapon in the hands of a clever enemy." "Perhaps you should consider why they love him," she replied, her gaze drifting to the arena. "Strength and defiance are virtues the people admire. They see in him what they wish they could be." The emperor's eyes narrowed. "And what do you see, dear sister?" Aurelia hesitated. She had seen Marcellus fight, had watched the raw power of his defiance in every strike, and the pain etched in his features. There was more to him than met the eye, but she dared not voice her thoughts aloud. "I see a gladiator who knows his place," she said finally, though the words rang hollow. Cassianus studied her for a moment before turning his attention back to the arena. For his sake, he had better remember it. The gladiator's bonds. In the dimly lit barracks, Marcellus sat with Joran, Camel, and Hagen. The bonds forged in the crucible of combat had grown stronger, the men relying on one another to survive the brutal games. That evening, Proximus entered the room, his sharp gaze scanning his gladiators. "You've been summoned for a special event," Proximus announced, his tone heavy with significance. "A match unlike any you've fought before. The Emperor himself has requested it." The room fell silent, the weight of the words sinking in. To be singled out by the Emperor was both an honor and a death sentence. Marcellus met Proximus's gaze, his mind already turning over the possibilities. Cassianus was testing him, pushing him into a corner where failure would mean death, and success would make him an even greater threat. "What's the fight?" Marcellus asked, his voice steady. "A grand reenactment of the Battle of Actium," Proximus replied. "You'll lead a small force against overwhelming odds. Chariots, archers, and veteran gladiators. Cassianus is sparing no expense." Joran whistled low, his jovial demeanor masking his concern. "Overwhelming odds, you say? Sounds like a typical day for us." Marcellus allowed himself a faint smile. "We've faced worse. A sister's plea." Later that night, as Marcellus prepared for the coming battle, a shadow slipped into the barracks. Aurelia emerged from the darkness, her hood drawn low to conceal her identity. Marcellus, sharpening his gladius, looked up and immediately recognized her. A face that had once been a fleeting part of his former life, now standing before him in the flesh. "You should not be here," he said, his tone neither welcoming nor hostile. "I came to warn you," Aurelia replied, her voice urgent. "Cassianus will not rest until you are dead. He sees you as a threat to his rule, and he will not hesitate to destroy you if it suits his purpose." Marcellus's expression remained unreadable. "And why should I trust the word of the Emperor's sister?" Aurelia hesitated, the weight of her own guilt pressing down on her. "Because I know what he is capable of," she said finally. "And because I have seen the pain in your eyes. You are not fighting for glory or survival. You are fighting for something greater. I cannot stop my brother, but I can offer you this warning. Be wary of those who would stand too close. Cassianus does not simply kill his enemies. He destroys everything they hold dear." Her words struck a chord, though Marcellus gave no outward indication. He nodded once, a silent acknowledgement of her warning, and she slipped back into the shadows as quietly as she had come. The Battle of Actium reimagined. The Colosseum was packed to capacity, the crowd a living sea of excitement. Marcellus and his fellow gladiators were thrust into the arena, the gates closing behind them with a resounding clang. Before them stood a force three times their size, gladiators outfitted as Roman soldiers, armed with spears, shields, and chariots. Marcellus quickly assessed the battlefield. The sand had been shaped into a mock coastline, complete with wooden ships on wheels to simulate the naval aspect of the battle. Archers perched on raised platforms, their arrows tipped with fire. It was a spectacle designed to crush even the most skilled fighters. He turned to his comrades, his voice cutting through the din. "We don't fight their battle. We make them fight ours. Stay close, move fast, and use their numbers against them." The fight began with a deafening clash of steel. The opposing force surged forward, their chariots thundering across the arena. Marcellus led his men with precision, using the terrain to funnel their enemies into narrow choke points. He directed Joran to topple one of the wooden ships, creating a barrier that forced the chariots to veer off course. Camel and Hagen picked off stragglers, their blades swift and merciless. The crowd roared as the gladiators turned the tide, their smaller numbers offset by their cunning and teamwork. Marcellus's leadership shone through, his commands clear and decisive. But as the battle raged on, he felt the weight of the Emperor's gaze upon him, a reminder that this fight was about more than survival. When the final enemy fell, the Colosseum erupted in deafening applause. Marcellus stood in the center of the arena, his gladius raised high, his expression grim. The crowd chanted his name, their adoration a stark contrast to the Emperor's smoldering anger. The storm approaches. As the gladiators returned to the barracks, their victory did little to lighten the mood. They knew Cassianus would not let this stand. Proximus approached Marcellus, his expression unusually somber. "You've made yourself a symbol," he said. "But symbols are dangerous, Marcellus. They inspire hope, and hope is the enemy of those in power." Marcellus met his gaze, his voice low but resolute. Hope is the only weapon I have left. In the Emperor's chambers, Cassianus seethed. The Spaniard grows too bold, he muttered. He must be reminded of his place. Perhaps, Aurelia said softly, her tone laced with hidden meaning. Or perhaps you should be reminded of yours. Cassianus shot her a glare, but the seed of doubt had been planted. The battle lines were being drawn, and the storm was only beginning. Chapter 5, The Emperor's Wrath. The victory at the Colosseum, while celebrated by the people, had cast a long shadow over the Imperial Palace. Emperor Cassianus prowled his private chambers, his movements restless and his expression dark. The Spaniard's triumph was more than just a gladiator's victory. It was a public rebuke, a reminder of his own fragility as ruler. He could not let it stand. Cassianus summoned Falco, his most trusted advisor, to the chamber. Falco, a wiry man with a penchant for cruelty, entered with a knowing smirk. The Spaniard has stirred the hornet's nest, he said, his voice oozing with mockery. The people chant his name as if he were a god. And gods can be slain, Cassianus snapped. But not yet. His death must serve a purpose. If we strike too soon, he becomes a martyr. No, we must unravel him piece by piece, until nothing remains. Falco inclined his head. I'll see to it. Shall I start with the other gladiators? Perhaps his comrades can be persuaded to abandon him. Cassianus shook his head. No, let them be. The Spaniard's strength lies in his hope. Crush that, and he will destroy himself. The gladiator's doubts. In the dim confines of the barracks, Marcellus cleaned his sword, his mind heavy with thoughts of the future. Victory had brought him closer to the people's adoration, but it had also drawn the Emperor's ire. He knew the games were no longer just entertainment. They were a battlefield for control, and he was at the center. Joran approached, his jovial demeanor replaced with uncharacteristic seriousness. You've made quite the enemy in Cassianus, he said, sitting beside Marcellus. The kind of enemy who doesn't fight fair. Marcellus didn't look up. I'm not here to fight fair. I'm here to finish what he started. Camel leaned against a nearby pillar, crossing his arms. And what's the plan, Spaniard? Fight your way to the Emperor's throne. You may have the crowd, but Cassianus has an army. Marcellus paused, his hand tightening around the hilt of his sword. The crowd is more powerful than any army. If I can turn the people against him, he won't be able to hold his throne. But first, I need to survive. Joran let out a low whistle. Survival's the tricky part, my friend. Cassianus won't stop until he's rid of you. One way or another. The Emperor's plot. Cassianus wasted no time. He called for a grand celebration to honor the gods, using the guise of piety to stage his next move. The festival would include a series of gladiatorial games, culminating in a spectacle designed to break the Spaniard's spirit. Falco oversaw the preparations, ensuring that every element of the event was designed to isolate and weaken Marcellus. The Spaniard would face opponents of legendary ferocity, lions, tigers, and the infamous Scorpion Guard, a squad of elite gladiators handpicked by Falco himself. Their reputation for ruthlessness was second to none. But Cassianus's cruelty didn't stop there. To sow discord among the gladiators, he arranged for Proximus to be arrested on fabricated charges. The trainer, who had been a pillar of support for Marcellus and his comrades, was dragged away in chains, leaving the ludus without its guiding force. Betrayal in the ranks. The news of Proximus's arrest hit the gladiators like a thunderbolt. Tensions flared, and unity began to unravel. Without Proximus's leadership, the men turned on one another, their fears and frustrations boiling over. Camel was the first to voice his doubts. Proximus is gone, and we're next. This fight isn't worth dying for. Joran growled, stepping forward. You think running will save you? Cassianus won't stop hunting us. You either stand and fight, or you die like a coward. The two men squared off, their tempers threatening to ignite into violence. Marcellus stepped between them, his voice cutting through the chaos. Enough. This is what Cassianus wants. Divide us, weaken us. If we fight each other, we've already lost. The room fell silent, the weight of his words sinking in. Marcellus looked at each of them in turn, his gaze unwavering. We've survived because we've stood together. If we falter now, we'll give Cassianus exactly what he wants. Proximus wouldn't want that, and neither should you. Reluctantly, the gladiators backed down, their unity fragile but intact. Marcellus knew the battle ahead would test them in ways they had never imagined. The arena's fury. The day of the festival dawned, the city alive with celebration. The Colosseum was packed to capacity, the crowd eager for the promised spectacle. Cassianus sat in his gilded box, his expression one of cold anticipation. Beside him, Aurelia watched silently, her thoughts hidden behind a mask of calm. The games began with smaller matches, mock naval battles, chariot races, and duels that whipped the crowd into a frenzy. Then came the main event. Marcellus and his comrades were led into the arena, their weapons glinting in the sunlight. The crowd erupted in cheers, their chants of the Spaniard echoing across the amphitheater. The gates opposite them creaked open, revealing the Scorpion Guard. Clad in black armor and wielding weapons designed for intimidation as much as destruction, they moved with deadly precision. Behind them, cages were wheeled into the arena, their contents hidden beneath thick tarps. The tension was palpable. The fight began with a ferocity that stunned even the most seasoned spectators. The Scorpion Guard attacked with relentless precision, their movements coordinated and brutal. Marcellus and his comrades fought back with everything they had, their training and camaraderie their only advantage. Then the cages were opened. Lions and tigers burst forth, their roars echoing across the Colosseum. The beasts charged into the fray, their claws and fangs a new, terrifying threat. The crowd screamed in a mixture of terror and excitement as chaos engulfed the arena. Marcellus quickly adapted, using the beasts' movements to disrupt the Scorpion Guard's formations. He led his comrades in a desperate bid for survival, turning the chaos to their advantage. Every strike, every dodge was a calculated effort to outlast their enemies. By the time the dust settled, the arena was littered with the bodies of fallen gladiators and beasts. Marcellus stood at the center, his gladius dripping with blood, his chest heaving. The crowd roared his name, their adoration a thunderous wave that even Cassianus could not silence. A new ally. As Marcellus returned to the barracks, battered but alive, Aurelia was waiting for him in the shadows. This time, her calm facade was gone, replaced with urgency. "You've proven your strength," she said, stepping forward. "But strength alone won't defeat my brother. You need allies." Marcellus eyed her warily. "And you're offering yourself?" "I'm offering you a chance," she replied. "Cassianus's grip on Rome is not as strong as it seems. The Senate despises him, the people distrust him, and even his own Praetorians whisper behind his back. With the right push, he can be toppled." Marcellus studied her for a long moment before nodding. "Then we push." Aurelia extended her hand, a faint smile playing on her lips. "Together, we can bring him down. But be warned, the cost will be high." Marcellus took her hand, his expression grim. "I've already lost everything. What's one more sacrifice?" Chapter 6, The Seeds of Rebellion. The alliance between Lucius Flavius Marcellus and Aurelia was forged in the shadows of the Colosseum, where whispers of rebellion could barely be heard over the roars of the crowd. For Aurelia, this was not just a betrayal of her brother, but a step toward redemption for standing idly by as Cassianus tightened his tyrannical grip. For Marcellus, it was the first glimmer of hope in his quest for vengeance and justice. A dangerous proposition. Under the cover of night, Aurelia led Marcellus through a network of tunnels beneath the city. These ancient passageways, forgotten by most, were known to her thanks to her position within the imperial household. The air was damp and heavy with the scent of decay, the flicker of torches casting eerie shadows on the walls. "Where are you taking me?" Marcellus asked, his voice low but steady. "To someone who can help us," Aurelia replied, her tone betraying a mix of urgency and caution. "If we're going to challenge Cassianus, we'll need more than the people's love. We need the Senate." Marcellus frowned. "The Senate? They've sat idle while Cassianus has crushed Rome under his heel. Why would they act now?" "Because they fear him," Aurelia said. "And fear is a powerful motivator. With the right leverage, they can be pushed into action." They arrived at a small, unassuming chamber where an older man awaited them. Dressed in modest robes, his sharp eyes belied his age. This was Senator Gracchus, one of the few remaining voices of reason within the Senate. He rose to greet them, his expression a mixture of surprise and curiosity. "Lady Aurelia," Gracchus said, inclining his head. "I did not expect to see you here, let alone with a gladiator." Marcellus bristled at the term, but Aurelia quickly intervened. "This is Lucius Marcellus, the Spaniard the people adore. He has more influence in the city than you realize, and he's the key to toppling my brother." Gracchus raised an eyebrow, clearly skeptical. "The Emperor is not a man to be trifled with. His reach extends far beyond the Colosseum." "And yet his foundation is crumbling," Marcellus interjected. "The people chant my name, not his. They see through his lies, his cruelty. What they need is a leader, someone willing to stand against him." Gracchus studied Marcellus for a long moment before nodding. "Very well. If you can rally the people, I'll see to it that the Senate moves against him. But be warned, Cassianus will not go quietly. He will fight with everything he has. Marcellus's jaw tightened. Let him. Fanning the flames. With Gracchus's support secured, Aurelia and Marcellus began laying the groundwork for their rebellion. Using her knowledge of the imperial court, Aurelia leaked information to the senators and spread rumors among the people about Cassianus's cruelty and incompetence. At the same time, Marcellus continued to win the crowd through his victories in the arena, using every fight to stoke the fires of discontent. The gladiators who fought alongside Marcellus became unwitting symbols of resistance. Joran, Camel, and Hagen, once skeptical of his ambitions, began to see the possibility of a future beyond the Colosseum. Their loyalty to Marcellus grew stronger, their camaraderie unbreakable. One evening, as the gladiators trained under the watchful eyes of the guards, Marcellus gathered them in a quiet corner of the yard. "We've fought for their amusement, spilled blood for their entertainment," he said, his voice firm but impassioned. "But we are more than slaves. We are warriors, and together, we can change the fate of Rome." Joran grinned, his booming laugh breaking the tension. "You always did have a way with words, Spaniard. If it's a fight you want, you'll have my sword." Camel smirked. "And my wits. Someone has to keep you alive out there." Even Hagen, ever stoic, gave a slight nod. "If we die, let it be for something worth dying for. The Emperor strikes." Cassianus was no fool. The whispers of rebellion reached his ears, and the rising popularity of the Spaniard had become impossible to ignore. He summoned Falco to his chambers, his mood darker than ever. "The gladiator grows bolder," Cassianus said, pacing the room. "And now the Senate whispers behind my back. I cannot allow this." Falco smirked. "Shall I have the Spaniard removed quietly? An accident in the arena, perhaps?" Cassianus shook his head. "No. His death must be public, undeniable. But we must break him first. Take his comrades, make them suffer. And if Aurelia is involved, bring her to me." Falco hesitated, the implication clear. "She is your sister, Emperor." "She is a traitor," Cassianus snapped. "And traitors are dealt with. The betrayal." As Marcellus and the gladiators prepared for the next games, the Praetorian Guard stormed the barracks. Chaos erupted as the guards dragged Joran, Camel, and Hagen from their quarters, their protests met with brutal force. Marcellus fought back, his training and fury turning him into a whirlwind of resistance, but the odds were insurmountable. Falco entered the room, flanked by more guards. "The Emperor sends his regards," he sneered. "You've been quite the thorn in his side, Spaniard. But every thorn is eventually plucked." Marcellus lunged at Falco, but the guards subdued him, their blows sending him to the ground. As he lay there, bloodied and defeated, Falco leaned in close. "Your friends will die for your defiance. And when they do, Rome will forget you." Aurelia's resolve. Word of the Praetorian raid reached Aurelia through her network of informants. The news of Marcellus's capture and his comrades' imprisonment struck her like a blow. She knew Cassianus would not stop until every ally of Marcellus was eradicated. She summoned Gracchus to her chambers, her composure giving way to desperation. "We must act now," she said. "Cassianus is tightening his grip, and if we wait any longer, it will be too late." Gracchus nodded, his expression grim. "The Senate is ready to move, but we need a spark to ignite the people." Aurelia's eyes burned with determination. "Then we give them a martyr. Marcellus must fight one last time." Chapter 7. The Trial of the Spaniard. The Colosseum was alive with the feral energy of a mob hungry for blood. Word had spread like wildfire. This was not an ordinary match. Today, the Spaniard, Rome's favorite gladiator, would face his ultimate trial. The spectacle was rumored to be orchestrated by Emperor Cassianus himself, a fight designed to strip away the Spaniard's growing legend and remind the people who truly held power. The Emperor's challenge. Lucius Flavius Marcellus stood in the dark confines of the holding chambers beneath the arena, his wrists shackled, his body battered but unbroken. His comrades, Joran, Camel, and Hagen, were gone, dragged away to separate cells. Their fates, like his own, hung in the balance. The iron door creaked open, and Falco stepped inside, his ever-present smirk in place. He carried a scroll bearing the Emperor's seal. "The Emperor has been generous," Falco said, his tone mocking. "He offers you a choice, Spaniard. Enter the arena, fight for your life, and perhaps entertain the masses one last time. Or refuse, and your comrades will be executed immediately." Marcellus's jaw tightened, but he said nothing. His silence only seemed to amuse Falco further. "Ah, the stoic hero," Falco continued, pacing. "But know this, today's fight is not meant to honor you. It is meant to break you. And when you fall, the people will see you for what you truly are, a slave. Marcellus finally spoke, his voice cold and unyielding. Tell your emperor that I will fight. But when this is over, he will face me, and I will remind him what true power is. Falco's smile faltered for the briefest of moments before he turned and left the chamber. The sound of the door slamming shut echoed like a death knell. The arena beckons. The gates opened, and the blinding sunlight flooded the chamber. Marcellus stepped into the Colosseum, the roar of the crowd crashing over him like a tidal wave. The chants of Spaniard. Spaniard reverberated through the massive amphitheater, a defiant cry from a populace desperate for hope. In the emperor's box, Cassianus sat with a thin smile, his sister Aurelia at his side. Her face was a mask of calm, but her eyes betrayed her turmoil. She had worked tirelessly to undermine her brother, but the cost of their rebellion had grown heavier by the day. "Do you see, dear sister?" Cassianus said, gesturing to the crowd. "Even the mighty Spaniard cannot escape my grasp. Today, I remind Rome where its loyalty lies." Aurelia said nothing, her hands gripping the edge of her seat. The trial begins. The first wave of combatants emerged from the opposing gate, a dozen heavily armed gladiators, each chosen for their brutality. Marcellus's eyes swept over them, his mind calculating. He was alone, outnumbered, and underarmed. The odds were stacked against him by design. The signal was given, and the gladiators charged. Marcellus moved with the precision of a seasoned warrior, sidestepping blows and using his opponent's momentum against them. He seized a fallen weapon, a gladius, and turned it into an extension of his will. The crowd roared as he felled one attacker after another, his movements a brutal symphony of skill and fury. But the emperor was not done. As the last of the gladiators fell, the gates opened once more, and a chariot rolled into the arena. Pulled by two armored horses and driven by a warrior wielding a long spear, the chariot was a formidable weapon. Behind it came a pack of lions, their roars echoing across the sands. The crowd gasped, their cheers turning to murmurs of fear and anticipation. Marcellus squared his shoulders, his eyes narrowing as he prepared for the next assault. A battle of wits and strength. The chariot charged, its spear-wielding driver aiming for Marcellus with deadly precision. He rolled to the side, narrowly avoiding the strike, and used the confusion of the lions to his advantage. The beasts, though deadly, were unpredictable, their movements disrupting the chariot's path. Marcellus baited one of the lions toward the chariot, forcing the driver to veer off course. As the chariot turned, Marcellus seized the opportunity to leap onto it. He wrestled the driver for control, the two men locked in a deadly struggle. With a final, brutal shove, Marcellus sent the driver tumbling to the ground and took the reins. The crowd erupted as Marcellus drove the chariot across the arena, using its momentum to scatter the lions. One by one, he dispatched the remaining threats, his determination unyielding. By the time the dust settled, the arena was silent, the bodies of his enemies strewn across the sand. Marcellus stood alone, bloodied but victorious. He raised his gladius to the sky, and the crowd roared, their cheers shaking the very foundations of the Colosseum. A moment of defiance. Cassianus's smile vanished as the chants of Spaniard. Spaniard filled the air. He rose from his seat, his face a mask of fury. Aurelia, however, allowed herself the faintest of smiles, her heart swelling with hope. Marcellus turned to face the emperor, his gaze locking onto the man who had destroyed his life. He raised his gladius and pointed it directly at Cassianus, a silent challenge that needed no words. The crowd, emboldened by Marcellus's defiance, began to chant louder. Spaniard! Spaniard! The name reverberated through the Colosseum, a cry of rebellion that sent a chill through the emperor's spine. Cassianus clenched his fists, his voice trembling with rage as he addressed the crowd. This man is a slave, a criminal. He fights because I allow it. His victories mean nothing. But the crowd ignored him, their chants drowning out his words. For the first time, Cassianus felt the weight of his people's disdain, and it terrified him. The rebellion grows. That night, Marcellus was taken back to the barracks under heavy guard, his victory having further cemented his status as a hero to the people. In the shadows, Aurelia met him, her face alight with urgency. "You've done it," she said. "The people are with you." Cassianus's grip is slipping. Marcellus, still bloodied and weary, looked at her with a grim determination. "This is only the beginning. The people may chant my name, but it's not enough. We need the Senate, the Praetorians. We need to cut off his power at the roots." Aurelia nodded. "Gracchus is preparing the Senate. But you must survive long enough for them to act." Marcellus clenched his fists. "I've come this far. I won't stop now." Chapter 8. the emperor's desperation. The aftermath of Marcellus's defiant victory left Rome buzzing with whispers of rebellion. The chants of Spaniard lingered in the streets, spreading like wildfire from the Colosseum to the marketplaces and beyond. For the first time in his reign, Emperor Cassianus felt his control slipping, the people's adoration for Marcellus becoming a direct threat to his authority. A meeting of power. The Senate chamber, typically a place of sterile debates and empty platitudes, was unusually tense. Gracchus stood at the center, addressing a small gathering of senators who had quietly aligned themselves against the emperor. "This is not merely a question of politics," Gracchus said, his voice firm. "Cassianus has overstepped his bounds. The people no longer cheer for their emperor. They cheer for a gladiator. And that, my friends, is an opportunity we cannot ignore." Senator Decius, a cautious man, stroked his beard thoughtfully. "And what of the Spaniard? He is a tool, yes, but one that could easily turn against us once the emperor falls." Gracchus shook his head. "Marcellus seeks justice, not power. He fights for what Cassianus has taken from him. If we align ourselves with him, we gain the people's trust. Without their support, any move against the emperor will fail." The senators murmured in agreement, their resolve growing. Plans were laid, messages dispatched, and the seeds of rebellion began to sprout in earnest. Cassianus tightens his grip. In the imperial palace, Cassianus paced his throne room like a caged animal. Falco stood by, his expression smug as ever, though even he could not ignore the tension in the air. "The Senate whispers," Cassianus growled. "The people chant for a slave. And my sister, she plots in the shadows, thinking I am blind to her treachery." Falco raised an eyebrow. "Shall I deal with Lady Aurelia, then?" "Quietly, of course." Cassianus paused, his eyes narrowing. "Not yet. She's useful for now. Her betrayal will serve as an example when the time comes. But the Spaniard, he must be dealt with." Falco smirked. "The games have failed to break him. Perhaps something more, personal." Cassianus's expression darkened. "Bring his comrades to the arena. Make him watch as they fall, one by one. Let him see that his defiance costs the lives of those he holds dear." The gladiator's resolve. In the barracks, Marcellus gathered with Joran, Camel, and Hagen. Though battered and weary, their bond was unshakable. The events of the past weeks had forged them into more than comrades. They were brothers in arms, bound by shared struggles and a common enemy. "Cassianus won't stop until we're all dead," Marcellus said, his voice steady. "But he underestimates us. He thinks we're just gladiators, slaves who will bend to his will." "He's wrong." Joran grinned, his usual jovial demeanor tempered by determination. "You've got a plan, I assume? Or are we just winging it?" Marcellus allowed himself a faint smile. "The Senate is moving against him. Gracchus is rallying support. Our job is to survive long enough for them to act." Camel leaned back against the wall, his arms crossed. "Survive. Easier said than done when you've got lions, chariots, and half the city's guards trying to kill you." Hagen, ever silent, placed a hand on Marcellus's shoulder. It was a simple gesture, but it spoke volumes. They were with him, no matter the odds. Aurelia's warning. Late that night, Aurelia slipped into the barracks under the cover of darkness. Her expression was grim as she approached Marcellus, her voice hushed but urgent. "Cassianus is planning something," she said. "He means to use your comrades against you." Marcellus's jaw tightened. "What do you mean?" "He's ordered them to be taken to the arena. He intends to make you watch their execution during the games tomorrow," Aurelia explained, her eyes filled with urgency. "You must be ready. If he breaks you in front of the people, this rebellion dies." Marcellus took a deep breath, his mind racing. "Then we won't let it happen. The day of reckoning." The Colosseum was filled to capacity, the air electric with anticipation. The emperor had promised a spectacle unlike any other, and the people had come in droves to witness it. Cassianus sat in his gilded box, flanked by Falco and his Praetorian guards. Aurelia sat nearby, her face a mask of calm, though her heart raced with fear for what was to come. Marcellus and his comrades were led into the arena, their chains clinking ominously. The crowd erupted in cheers at the sight of the Spaniard, their chants of "Spaniard" echoing through the amphitheater. But the sight of the heavy iron gates opposite them silenced the cheers. Everyone held their breath as they creaked open. From the shadows emerged a series of cages, each containing a fierce predator, lions, tigers, and bears, their roars shaking the very ground. Behind them came a unit of elite gladiators, the Emperor's Scorpion Guard, armed and ready to kill. Cassianus stood, raising his arms to silence the crowd. "Behold," he called, his voice booming. "The Spaniard and his comrades, defiant in the face of Rome's glory, will now pay the price for their insolence." Let the games begin. The gates slammed shut, and the fight began. Defiance in the arena. Marcellus and his comrades moved as one, their training and camaraderie their only advantage. They faced overwhelming odds, the Scorpion Guard attacking with deadly precision, while the beast circled, waiting to strike. Joran's booming laugh cut through the chaos as he swung a massive hammer, scattering their enemies. Is this the best Rome has to offer? Camel darted in and out of the fray, his agility allowing him to strike with precision. Hagen, ever the silent warrior, stood like a fortress, his shield deflecting blows as he protected his comrades. Marcellus fought with a ferocity that stunned even the seasoned crowd. His movements were a blend of brute strength and calculated strategy, each strike a statement of defiance against the Emperor's tyranny. The crowd, once silent, erupted into cheers, their chants growing louder with every blow. The turning point. As the fight raged on, Marcellus spotted an opportunity. A fallen spear lay near the cages holding the beasts. With a burst of speed, he seized it and used it to open one of the cages. The lion within, disoriented and enraged, charged into the fray, attacking the Scorpion Guard. The chaos spread, and the tide began to turn. The crowd, emboldened by Marcellus's defiance, began chanting louder, their voices shaking the very foundations of the Colosseum. Spaniard! Spaniard! Cassianus, watching from above, clenched his fists in fury. This ends now, he hissed to Falco. Release the final wave. The gates opened one last time, revealing a massive war elephant, armored and outfitted for destruction. The crowd gasped as the beast charged into the arena, its handler driving it toward Marcellus. Marcellus stood his ground, his gladius in hand. The moment the elephant charged, he leaped to the side, using its momentum to crash it into the remaining Scorpion Guard. The crowd erupted in deafening cheers as the beast collapsed, the fight won. A public challenge. Marcellus turned to face the Emperor's box, his chest heaving and his gladius raised. The crowd fell silent as he pointed the blade directly at Cassianus. Rome belongs to its people. Marcellus shouted, his voice carrying across the amphitheater. Not to a tyrant. The crowd roared in agreement, their chants of Spaniard, now a rallying cry. For the first time, Cassianus felt the weight of the people's anger, his control slipping through his fingers. Aurelia stood, her heart pounding. The tide had turned, but the battle was far from over. Chapter 9, The Rebellion Ignites. The Colosseum buzzed with the energy of a crowd transformed. Where once they had been spectators of a game, now they were participants in something far greater, a challenge to imperial power. Lucius Flavius Marcellus, the Spaniard, stood in the center of the arena, his gladius still pointed at Emperor Cassianus. The chants of Spaniard rang out, louder and fiercer than ever before. Cassianus, seated in his gilded box, clenched his fists so tightly that his knuckles turned white. His carefully crafted illusion of control was unraveling. The Spaniard had not only survived the trial, but had turned the tide of public sentiment against the throne itself. Aurelia's next move. Aurelia watched from her seat, her heart racing. She knew this moment was pivotal. The rebellion could either take flight or collapse entirely, depending on what happened next. As the crowd's chants reached a fever pitch, she turned to Senator Gracchus, who had joined her under the guise of observing the games. Now is the time, she whispered urgently. The people are with him. If we act quickly, we can rally the Senate and strike. Gracchus nodded gravely. It's a gamble, but you're right. The longer we wait, the more likely Cassianus is to recover. I'll summon the senators. Aurelia's gaze returned to the arena, where Marcellus stood defiantly. She felt a surge of pride and fear in equal measure. His bravery had sparked something she hadn't thought possible. A city ready to rise against a tyrant. The Emperor's fury. Cassianus stood abruptly, raising his arms to quiet the crowd. Enough, he roared, his voice laced with fury. This man is no hero. He is a slave, a criminal who defies the will of Rome itself. The crowd's chants faltered, though their loyalty to Marcellus remained palpable. Cassianus seized the opportunity to regain control. You cheer for a man who would see your city burn, your traditions destroyed. This is treason. Marcellus turned to face the Emperor, his voice ringing out across the Colosseum. Treason? Rome was built on the backs of men like me. Farmers, soldiers, workers. Not tyrants who claim the throne through deceit and blood. The crowd erupted once more, their chants of Spaniard, drowning out the Emperor's words. Cassianus's face twisted in rage. He gestured to his Praetorian guards. End this now. A battle in the arena. The gates to the Colosseum creaked open, and a contingent of Praetorian guards marched into the arena, their weapons drawn. The crowd gasped as they realized the Emperor intended to silence Marcellus by force. Marcellus tightened his grip on his gladius, his gaze steady. He was exhausted from the previous battle, his body battered and bruised, but he stood tall, refusing to yield. The guards formed a line, their shields raised as they advanced. Before the first blow could be struck, a deafening cheer rose from the crowd. Stones, pottery, and other debris rained down from the stands as the people took up arms in defense of their champion. The guards hesitated, caught between their duty and the sheer force of the crowd's fury. Marcellus seized the moment, charging at the guards with the ferocity of a man with nothing left to lose. His movements were swift and precise, his years as a soldier guiding his strikes. The crowd's cheers fueled him, each roar a reminder of why he fought. The streets of Rome. As chaos erupted in the Colosseum, word spread rapidly through the city. The rebellion that had simmered for months now boiled over. Crowds gathered in the streets, chanting Marcellus's name and demanding justice. Fires were lit as symbols of imperial authority were torn down, the people emboldened by the events in the arena. Gracchus, true to his word, rallied his fellow senators. They convened in secret, drafting a declaration of no confidence in the emperor and planning their next move. For the first time, Cassianus's rule faced a legitimate challenge from within the Senate itself. The emperor's retaliation. Back in the palace, Cassianus's fury burned hotter than ever. "How could this happen?" he bellowed, his voice echoing through the halls. "The people, the Senate, they dare to defy me?" Falco, ever the sycophant, bowed low. "The Spaniard is the root of this, emperor. Remove him, and the rebellion will wither." Cassianus glared at him. "Then why is he still alive?" "I gave the order, kill him." Falco hesitated. The crowd turned against the guards. They were unable to reach him. Cassianus slammed his fist against a marble table. "Then we escalate. Declare martial law. Arrest the senators. Make the people fear me again. Marcellus's escape." In the chaos of the arena, Marcellus fought his way toward the gates. His comrades, Joran, Camel, and Hagen, joined him, their combined strength cutting a path through the Praetorian guards. The crowd surged around them, creating a barrier that prevented the guards from advancing further. Aurelia appeared in the tunnel leading out of the arena, her face etched with determination. "This way," she called, beckoning them to follow. The group slipped through the tunnels beneath the Colosseum, the echoes of the crowd fading behind them. They emerged into the streets, where Aurelia had arranged for a small group of rebels to escort them to safety. "We don't have much time," Aurelia said as they climbed into a covered cart. "Cassianus will tear the city apart to find you." Marcellus nodded, his expression grim. "Then let him try. A city on the brink." The cart rumbled through the streets of Rome, the group hidden beneath heavy tarps. Outside, the sounds of rebellion filled the air, shouts, clashing metal, the crackle of fires. Rome was a city on the brink, its people caught between fear and hope. Marcellus turned to Aurelia. "What now?" "Now we regroup," she said. "The Senate is moving against Cassianus, but they'll need time. Until then, you must stay hidden." Marcellus frowned. "I can't sit idly by while the city burns. If the people are willing to fight, I need to be there with them." Aurelia placed a hand on his arm. "Your presence is more powerful as a symbol. If you're captured or killed, this rebellion dies." Reluctantly, Marcellus nodded. "Then we fight from the shadows, the emperor's last stand." Back in the palace, Cassianus prepared for the inevitable. He fortified his position, surrounding himself with Praetorian guards and ordering mass arrests across the city. His paranoia grew with every passing moment, his grip on power slipping despite his desperate efforts. "The Spaniard has turned the people against me," he muttered to himself. "But I will remind them who their emperor is. By the gods, I will remind them." Falco approached, his tone cautious. "The Senate plots against you, Emperor. Their declaration of no confidence is nearly complete." Cassianus's eyes burned with rage. "Then the Senate must fall, just as the Spaniard will. Prepare the Praetorians. If Rome wants war, I will give it to them." Chapter 10. The Spark of Revolution. The rebellion, once a whisper in the alleys of Rome, was now a roaring blaze that consumed the city. Emperor Cassianus, backed into a corner, clung to power with desperation. Martial law was declared, Praetorian guards flooded the streets, and the crackle of flames intertwined with the cries of citizens. The people of Rome were no longer mere subjects. They had become a force demanding change. A hidden sanctuary. Deep beneath the city, in a disused aqueduct, Marcellus and his comrades gathered with Aurelia, Senator Gracchus, and a small group of rebel leaders. The dimly lit chamber hummed with tension as they plotted their next moves. Maps of the city were spread across a wooden table, marked with points of interest. The Senate House, the Praetorian Barracks, and the Imperial Palace. Gracchus, his voice steady despite the chaos above, addressed the group. Cassianus's forces are spread thin. His martial law may keep the people in fear, but it leaves his defenses vulnerable. If we strike decisively, we can take the Senate House and rally the people. Marcellus, leaning against the wall, crossed his arms. The people are already with us. They've shown they're willing to fight. What they need is a leader to unite them. And that leader is you, Aurelia said, stepping forward. The people chant your name, not mine, not Gracchus's. You are the symbol of their defiance. Marcellus's jaw tightened. A symbol isn't enough to win this. We need action. Cassianus won't give up power without a fight. Gracchus nodded. Then we must prepare for that fight. The Senate is nearly ready to declare Cassianus unfit to rule. When they do, it will force the Praetorians to choose, stand with the Emperor or side with Rome. The people rise. In the streets, the rebellion grew bolder. Citizens armed themselves with whatever they could find, farm tools, kitchen knives, even stones, and clashed with the Praetorian guards. The air was thick with smoke, the scent of burning wood, and the metallic tang of blood filling every corner of the city. Word of Marcellus's survival spread like wildfire, igniting hope in even the most downtrodden. The chants of Spaniard echoed through the narrow alleys, a rallying cry that united the disparate factions of the rebellion. Joran, Camel, and Hagen, unable to sit idle, ventured into the streets to aid the rebels. Joran's booming laugh and massive hammer became a beacon for those who fought alongside him. Camel's quick thinking and agility turned the tide in skirmishes, while Hagen's stoic determination provided an anchor for the resistance. Cassianus strikes back. In the palace, Cassianus convened with his closest advisers. His face was pale, his eyes bloodshot from sleepless nights. The rebellion had shaken his confidence, but his rage fueled him. Burn the districts where the rebels gather, he ordered Falco. Spare no one. If they want war, they'll see what an emperor is capable of. Falco hesitated. The Praetorians are stretched thin, Emperor. If we push too hard, they may begin to question their loyalty. Cassianus slammed his fist on the table. Then replace them with men who do not question. Rome belongs to me, not to these peasants. Falco bowed, though his expression betrayed doubt. It will be done, Emperor. As Cassianus's orders were carried out, sections of the city became war zones. Buildings were set ablaze, and the screams of the innocent filled the night. But instead of crushing the rebellion, the brutality only hardened the resolve of the people. Aurelia's betrayal. Aurelia's role in the rebellion had remained a secret thus far, but her brother's paranoia grew. When Falco uncovered a series of letters connecting her to the Senate and the rebellion, he brought the evidence to Cassianus. The emperor stared at the parchment, his hands trembling with rage. My own sister, he whispered, his voice trembling. Aurelia would dare betray me? Falco stepped forward. Shall I deal with her, Emperor? Cassianus shook his head, his eyes cold. No, bring her to me. I want to hear her confess. Aurelia was dragged to the throne room, her wrists bound and her hair disheveled. Despite her situation, she held her head high, her gaze unwavering as she met her brother's furious eyes. Why? Cassianus demanded, his voice breaking. You are my blood, my family. Why would you side with them? Because you've turned Rome into a prison, Aurelia said, her voice calm but firm. The people hate you, Cassianus. They suffer under your rule, and you've done nothing but feed your own ambition. Cassianus's face twisted with anguish and anger. I have protected Rome. I have given it strength. You've given it fear, Aurelia replied. And fear is not loyalty. Cassianus gestured to the guards. Take her to the dungeons. She will live long enough to see this rebellion crushed. Marcellus takes the lead. When news of Aurelia's capture reached Marcellus, he knew time was running out. The rebellion had reached its boiling point, but without a decisive blow, it would falter. We strike the palace, Marcellus said, addressing the rebels gathered in the sanctuary. Cassianus is the head of the snake. Cut it off, and the rest will fall. Gracchus hesitated. The palace is heavily guarded. Even with the people on our side, it's a suicide mission. Marcellus met his gaze. Every moment we wait, more innocent lives are lost. This isn't just about me or Cassianus, it's about Rome. If we fail, we fail together. Joran stepped forward, gripping his hammer. I've faced worse odds. Let's do this. Camel and Hagen nodded in agreement, their loyalty to Marcellus unwavering. The other rebels rallied around them, their determination burning brighter than ever. The march on the palace. Under the cover of darkness, the rebels moved through the city. The streets were still smouldering from the Emperor's scorched earth tactics, but the people refused to be cowed. They joined the march, swelling the ranks of the rebellion with every step. As they neared the palace, the Praetorian guards formed a defensive line, their shields gleaming in the torchlight. For a moment, silence hung heavy in the air, broken only by the distant crackle of fire. Marcellus stepped forward, his voice ringing out across the plaza. "Rome belongs to its people, not a tyrant. Stand with us, or fall with him." The guards hesitated, their loyalty wavering. Whispers spread through their ranks. Many had heard of the Spaniard's defiance, his victories in the arena, his calls for justice. Slowly, one by one, some began to lower their shields and step aside. The rebellion surged forward, the palace gates looming ahead. Marcellus knew the hardest battle was yet to come, but for the first time, he felt the tide turning in their favor. Chapter 11, The Siege of the Palace. The march on the Imperial Palace was a moment that would be etched into Rome's history. Marcellus led the charge with Joran, Camille, Hagen, and a growing force of rebels at his side. Their numbers swelled as citizens, inspired by the Spaniards' defiance, poured into the streets to join the cause. The palace, a symbol of imperial authority, now stood as a fortress of tyranny, a last line of defense. The Praetorian Guard, divided in loyalty, became the first test of the rebellion's strength. Many guards had abandoned their posts, unwilling to shed blood for an emperor who had lost the people's favor. Yet others, bound by duty or fear, remained steadfast, their shields locked in formation at the gates of the palace. Marcellus addressed the crowd from atop a makeshift platform. His voice carried over the clamor, commanding attention. "Soldiers of Rome," he called out, "you swore an oath to protect this city, to serve its people, not a tyrant who has brought it to ruin. Lay down your arms, and you will be spared. Stand with him, and you will fall with him." The guards wavered, their discipline shaken by the rising chants of the crowd. One by one, they began to lower their shields and step aside, joining the rebellion or fading into the shadows. A few diehard loyalists remained, but they were no match for the determined mob that surged forward. The battle within. The gates of the palace were breached, and chaos erupted within. The halls of marble and gold became a battlefield as the rebels poured in, clashing with the remnants of the Praetorian Guard. The sounds of swords clashing, cries of pain, and shouted orders echoed through the grand corridors. Marcellus led his comrades with precision, cutting through the opposition with the skill of a seasoned general. Joran wielded his massive hammer with devastating force, clearing paths through clusters of guards. Camille's agility made him a blur, striking quickly and disappearing before his enemies could react. Hagen, ever the sentinel, shielded the group from attacks, his calm demeanor unshaken even in the heart of battle. As they pushed deeper into the palace, Marcellus's thoughts turned to Aurelia. He knew time was of the essence. If Cassianus saw the rebellion turning against him, he might exact his revenge on her before attempting to flee. Cassianus's desperation. In the emperor's private chambers, Cassianus paced like a trapped animal. The sounds of battle grew closer, and the once unshakable ruler now felt the weight of his crumbling empire. Falco, his trusted but increasingly nervous advisor, stood nearby. "They're inside the palace, Emperor," Falco reported, his usual smirk replaced with fear. "We should consider retreating to the eastern provinces. We can regroup and—" "No," Cassianus roared, his voice cracking. "I will not abandon Rome to that slave. This is my city, my empire." Falco hesitated. "The Praetorians are falling back. We have little support left." Cassianus glared at him, his fury turning cold. "Then you will fight. Prove your loyalty to your emperor." Falco paled but nodded, knowing refusal would mean his immediate execution. He left the chamber to muster what remained of their forces. Cassianus turned to the dungeon guards stationed nearby. "Bring Aurelia to me. If I fall, I will ensure she falls with me." Aurelia's rescue. In the dark, damp dungeon beneath the palace, Aurelia sat chained, her thoughts racing as she listened to the distant sounds of battle. The door to her cell burst open, and for a moment, her heart sank, thinking it was Cassianus's men. But it was Marcellus who entered, his face grim but determined. "Aurelia," he said, kneeling to break her chains. "We need to move. Now." She looked up at him, her relief quickly replaced by urgency. "Cassianus, he'll try to escape if he thinks he's lost. He can't be allowed to leave." Marcellus helped her to her feet. "He won't. This ends today. The final confrontation." The throne room was a stark contrast to the chaos engulfing the palace. Its gilded walls and opulent decor seemed almost untouched by the rebellion, a silent testament to the emperor's isolation from the suffering he had caused. Cassianus sat on the throne, his sword resting across his lap. His expression was a mixture of rage and desperation. Marcellus entered, flanked by Joran, Camel, Hagen, and Aurelia. The room was eerily quiet as they approached the dais. "You dare to bring this rabble into my palace?" Cassianus spat, rising to his feet. "You think you can overthrow an emperor?" Marcellus stepped forward, his voice steady. "You are no emperor. You are a coward who hides behind soldiers and walls while Rome burns. Your rule ends here." Cassianus unsheathed his sword, his eyes blazing with fury. "Then come and take it, Spaniard." The two men clashed in a ferocious duel. Cassianus fought with the desperation of a man who knew he had already lost, his strikes wild and fueled by rage. Marcellus, though weary from the day's battles, fought with precision, his years of training as a soldier guiding every move. The fight was brutal, the sound of steel ringing through the chamber. Cassianus managed to wound Marcellus, a shallow cut across his arm, but it only seemed to fuel the Spaniard's resolve. With a final, powerful strike, Marcellus disarmed the emperor, sending his sword clattering to the floor. Cassianus fell to his knees, staring up at Marcellus with defiance. "Kill me then. Prove you're no better than the tyrant you claim I am." Marcellus hesitated, his gladius poised. The room seemed to hold its breath as he considered the emperor's words. Then he lowered his weapon. "I'm not here for vengeance," Marcellus said. "I'm here for Rome, the people's justice." Cassianus was dragged from the palace by the rebels, his once imposing figure, now a broken man. The crowd outside erupted into cheers as Marcellus emerged, bloodied but victorious. The emperor was brought to the steps of the palace, where Gracchus and the senators awaited. The declaration of no confidence was read aloud, stripping Cassianus of his title and naming him a traitor to Rome. The crowd's roar was deafening as the former emperor was led away in chains, his fate to be decided by the people he had oppressed. A new dawn. As the sun rose over the city, the fires began to die down, and the people of Rome emerged from the shadows. The rebellion had succeeded, and for the first time in years, hope filled the air. Marcellus stood on the steps of the palace, flanked by Aurelia, Joran, Camel, Hagen, and Gracchus. He addressed the crowd, his voice carrying across the plaza. "Rome belongs to its people," he said. "Today, we have reclaimed it. But this is not the end. It is the beginning of a new era, one built on justice, freedom, and unity." The crowd erupted into cheers, their voices a testament to the resilience of the human spirit. Chapter 12, The Legacy of the Spaniard. Rome stirred awake to a new dawn, its streets quieter than they had been in months. The fires of rebellion had burned out, leaving behind smoldering ruins and a city forever changed. The people, weary yet hopeful, emerged from their homes to rebuild, their spirits renewed by the victory of the rebellion. At the heart of this transformation stood Lucius Flavius Marcellus, the Spaniard, whose name was now synonymous with justice and defiance. The trial of Cassianus. In the days following the rebellion, the former emperor Cassianus was held in the dungeons beneath the Senate House. The Senate convened in full, a rare occurrence in the fractured politics of Rome, to decide his fate. The chamber, once a place of hollow debates, now resonated with the gravity of its purpose. Senator Gracchus presided over the trial, his voice steady as he addressed the assembly. "Cassianus stands accused of tyranny, corruption, and the betrayal of Rome's people. His actions have brought this city to the brink of ruin. It is the duty of this body to deliver justice." Cassianus, shackled and pale, sat in silence. His defiance had withered in the face of defeat, leaving behind a hollow shell of the man who once ruled with an iron fist. When asked to speak in his defense, he simply shook his head. Marcellus watched from the gallery, his presence a powerful reminder of what the rebellion had cost and what it had achieved. When the Senate voted unanimously to strip Cassianus of all titles and sentence him to exile, the crowd gathered outside erupted into cheers. The former emperor was led through the streets in chains, his destination a distant outpost far from the heart of the empire. As he passed the people who had once chanted his name, their silence was deafening. Rome had moved on, and Cassianus was nothing more than a ghost of its dark past. The restoration begins. With Cassianus removed from power, the real work began. The Senate, under Gracchus's leadership, took steps to restore order to the city. The Praetorian Guard was disbanded and replaced with a citizen militia loyal to the people rather than a single ruler. Laws were rewritten, and reforms were enacted to prevent another tyrant from seizing control. Marcellus, though instrumental in the rebellion, refused any formal position of power. "Rome needs leaders who serve its people," he told Gracchus. I'm a soldier, not a senator. Gracchus nodded, understanding the weight of Marcellus's words. Your humility is what makes you a true leader, Marcellus. But Rome will always owe you a debt. Aurelia's vision. Aurelia, who had risked everything to stand against her brother, became a pivotal figure in the new Rome. Her intelligence and courage earned her the respect of the Senate, and she worked tirelessly to ensure that the city's recovery was swift and just. One evening, as she and Marcellus walked through the city's recovering streets, she spoke of her vision for Rome. We have a chance to build something better, she said, her voice filled with conviction. Not just a city, but a beacon of hope for the entire empire. Marcellus smiled faintly. Rome will thrive because of people like you, Aurelia. Your brother's legacy may have been destruction, but yours will be one of rebuilding. She looked at him, gratitude in her eyes. And what of you, Spaniard? What will your legacy be? I've done what I set out to do, he replied. Rome is free, and my family is avenged. The rest, that's for others to decide. Farewell to a hero. As the city stabilized, Marcellus began to withdraw from public life. His victories in the arena and his leadership during the rebellion had made him a legend, but he yearned for a quieter existence. One morning, without fanfare, he gathered his comrades, Joran, Camel, and Hagen, and prepared to leave the city. Where will you go? Joran asked, his booming voice tinged with sadness. Home, Marcellus replied. To the farm I've dreamed of every day since this began. Camel smirked. And leave all this behind. The glory, the crowds. Marcellus laughed softly. I've had enough glory to last a lifetime. Now I just want peace. Hagen, ever the quiet one, clasped Marcellus's arm in a rare display of emotion. You've earned it. As Marcellus mounted his horse, Aurelia appeared, her expression unreadable. You'll always have a place here, she said. Rome will never forget what you've done. Marcellus nodded. Take care of it, Aurelia. It's in good hands. A new era. The years that followed were marked by change. Rome slowly healed. Its people rebuilding not just their city, but their trust in one another. The story of the Spaniard became a tale passed down through generations, a reminder of the power of courage and unity in the face of tyranny. Aurelia and Gracchus continued to guide the Senate, ensuring that the reforms they had fought for endured. Joran, Camel, and Hagen each found their paths, their bonds of friendship unbroken, even as their lives diverged. And Marcellus, far from the chaos of the city, returned to the quiet fields of Hispania. There, among the olive groves and the gentle whispers of the wind, he found the peace he had sought for so long. But even in solitude, his thoughts often drifted back to Rome, a city that had tested him, shaped him, and ultimately redeemed him. Epilogue: The legacy lives on. Years later, a monument was erected in the heart of the city, a towering statue of a gladiator with a gladius raised high. Beneath it, an inscription read, "To Lucius Flavius Marcellus, the Spaniard, champion of the people, liberator of Rome, and guardian of justice." The people of Rome would gather there to tell his story, their voices filled with reverence and pride. And though Marcellus himself never returned to see it, his legacy lived on in every act of defiance against oppression, every fight for freedom, and every hope for a better tomorrow. Rome had been saved, not by an emperor, but by its people. The end.